This is Coach Lee, and you're listening to The Door Report.
At Vanderbilt, it's Tim Corbin and the Vandy Boys, Jerry Stackhouse on the hardwood, and Clark Lee on the gridiron. Nashville, it's time to sit back, relax, grab a cold one, and enjoy the show. The Music City is our stage, and West End is where we rock. You're listening to The Door Report, the premier Vanderbilt podcast for fans who bleed black and gold. Commodore Nation, anchor down.
Welcome back into The Door Report, episode 245 on a Wednesday evening, October 25th, 2023. I am Will Byram, joined as always by my co-host Trevor Hewlin, who is barely in the screen for some reason, if you're watching on YouTube here. But here at The Door Report, as Trevor gets up to slightly fix the camera angle, we are sponsored by Corey Perkins of Parks Realty. If you're a first-time home buyer or looking to move homes in the Middle Tennessee area, Corey Perkins is your man. You can reach out to Corey via phone call or text at 615-967-8623. Or you can reach out to Corey via email at coreyperkins@realtracks.com. Realtracks spelled realtracs.com. There was a lot of chaos going on during that sponsorship read. Phoebe jumped up on the table.
I'm not even talking into the mic.
I was about to say, this is a chaotic start to episode 245. We will have two segments on episode 245 for the Ole Miss preview. We are going to be joined by Michael Katz, who covers Ole Miss for the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal in segment two. Michael is going to provide us with some insight on the Ole Miss Rebels and what to expect this Saturday against the number 12, 6-1 Ole Miss Rebels out of Oxford.
Trevor, is he related to Dan Katz, known as the artist known as Barstool Big Cat? Should we ask him?
Yeah, I think that's a question. Trevor, you just start out asking that question, segment two. Just open it up.
Can you
like
tell
that.
Us about your cousin Dan Katz, please?
Give us
the artist. The artist known as Barstool Big Cat. He's like, I'm actually not related to him at all.
We're like, well, why did we even book you?
We and thought we were getting Big Cat's
just,
cousin.
Just end the interview immediately. But Trevor, we've got the Vanderbilt Ole Miss preview, which, like I said, is going to be a majority of us discussing the Vanderbilt side of things, because Michael is going to be able to provide us with more insight on Ole Miss. We also have a quarterback announcement to discuss. We talked about it a little bit the last couple episodes, but Ken Seals has been announced as the starting quarterback by Clark Lee on the Commodore Hour, broken by, I think, our old pal, our old friend, Billy Derrick.
By God, that's Billy Derrick's anthem.
Future voice of the Commodores, Billy Derrick. We'll get to me and Trevor's predictions in segment one, and we'll get Michael's prediction in segment two. But Trevor, how are the vibes going into this matchup before we really dig into things?
I can't lie. All I've been thinking about is Vanderbilt basketball. So I've been in such a wonderful mood. And then when I remembered, I think like last night that we were going to record a pod regarding this Ole Miss game, I got chronically depressed. I called my primary care physician all the way in White House. I was like, I'm going to need to restock on these happy pills, brother. He's like, what's wrong with life? And I was like, Vandy football. I need that dosage up.
Hope is on the horizon, however.
Oh, don't worry. Those pills are going to go down the toilet come November.
That's all he needs is a Presbyterian domination, and Trevor no longer needs any SSRIs.
I will be cured of my chronic depression.
The cure for... Jesus. All right. We're already off the rails.
The cure for chronic depression is for Vanderbilt to be good at something.
All right, Trevor, Jesus Christ. It's time to get in to the Vanderbilt Ole Miss preview. But before we get into that and much more, don't forget to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Door Report. Like us on Facebook. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. Emphasis on subscribe to our YouTube channel. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. And while you're at it, give our podcast 5 stars and a review on iTunes. Trevor, it's now time for breaking news.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
All right, Trevor. I forgot to tease it before we went into the breaking news break and ad break to start it out here in segment one. We have teased it for a couple episodes, but it's time to get to some 5-star reviews. I think I've picked out 4 on iTunes or on, what do you call it, Apple Podcasts.
iTunes, Apple.
Whatever you want to call it.
Same.
But I have not read these prior. This should be interesting. Let's get into it, Trevor. From Blake_F. I think we know who that is.
Congratulations on the new job, by the way, Morgan and Morgan. I think we know who orchestrated the Will Shepard NIL deal now. So shout out Blake.
Morgan and Morgan seems to be for the Doors.
Should we get jobs at Morgan and Morgan?
I think that might be a potential podcast sponsor.
TDR presented by Corey Perkins of Parks Realty and Morgan Morgan.
And Morgan and Morgan for the people. Just add to the insanity of whatever the TDR experience is at this point. I don't even know like how you would define it. Like we were pitching it in front of VCs. Like, what is this? It's a Vanderbilt podcast, but also just like if the Joker ran the Vanderbilt podcast.
I don't know. But not like the Heath Ledger Joker, no. Like the Joaquin Phoenix Joker, to where it truly is like unhinged.
Mixed with like the old school 90s Batman Joker. Oh, I think you could throw in.
Who is that Joker?
I don't know. We're getting off track here, Trevor. We'll look that up after we get to 5-star reviews. Anybody out there, production team? Trevor, are you frozen?
No. I'm trying to think of the Joker. He sits courtside of the Lakers. He was in The Shining. Jack Nicholson. Why could I not remember one of the greatest actors in American history?
I knew your brain. I didn't know exactly who you were thinking of.
I was like, I can see him at the Lakers game. I can see him in The Shining. I'm like, I know who this is.
Funny enough, The Shining is probably the movie I'm going to be watching tonight after we finish recording here.
Great
but
film.
Let's get into the 5-star reviews here. From Blake_F, Blake Fromang, friend of the pod, former guest of the pod on episode 242, writes, the subject is play under review. Blake says, I, allegedly, accused Will of going to a bachelor party during the UNLV game, which in turn led him to becoming the harbinger of destruction for Vanderbilt's season. He threw a verbal challenge flag in the alleged accusation is under review. Cuts to unsponsored TDR cocktail segment. After further review, the accusation is sustained.
What? Yes, that's my boy. That's my boy.
I object. I don't know. I'm arguing against a lawyer. He says, off the record, can't be used against me. I got the voices mixed up. Your decision-making score is amended to be 10 out of 10.
You're gonna get an apology letter from the SEC like Vanderbilt does every week. we need an apology letter from Blake's office.
Blake refuses to admit his alleged accusations. He keeps throwing in the allegedly, very lawyerly of Blake. All right, we've got 3 more here. 3 more 5-star reviews here. This one from Seals for President. Subject line, we love Ken. That's going to be something we get into early here in segment one is the discussion of the quarterback position.
Yeah.
But it says, the grit is real. The Ken Seals fan club meets again. P.S. One more bachelor's party and you two are kicked out of lot 2.
Trevor.
That's on you. I don't know. Everyone's getting real hung up on this bachelor party trip.
And my fault. I do take full
UNLV,
it was unless, this season is my fault. I'll say that on record. This season is my fault.
Unless I'm wrong, UNLV's 6-1.
Is that right?
I think they are. I think UNLV, more than anything, is just simply better. Vanderbilt should have won that game. And it's because of Trevor they lost. But I think, unless I'm mistaken, UNLV is turning out.
They were projected
to be
like bottom tier in their the WAC?
Yeah, they're 6-1, 3-0 in conference, won 5 games in a row. So that freshman quarterback's legit for UNLV. Yeah, that's an interesting little tidbit of information.
That doesn't make me feel any better about the loss.
No, it doesn't make me feel any better at all. But maybe, yeah, you should feel almost guiltier because now you really screwed it up.
Yeah, I Vanderbilt's one chance at like a really high quality win. I screwed. Who would have thunk it?
Jesus Christ.
Who would have thunk?
3-5 would feel a lot better right now than 2-6.
3-5, and I'm drinking the hopium.
Next 5-star review. Shout out to Seals for President and Blake_F for the 5-star reviews. Dogs. You know, I was reminded that we forgot to bark like idiots after that. Is the title of this next 5-star review is Dogs. From Air Force Door Dog.
Hey, thank you for your service, Air Force Door.
He says, been listening all year. Big fan of what you guys do and bring to the Vandy fan base. You guys don't get enough thanks. Keep grinding and keep the grit. I believe in Lee and these Vandy athletes. Anchor down, gentlemen. I'm about to cry.
Anchor down. Should we give a USA for Air Force Door?
USA. 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 Dog.
Unprompted, we both cut that off after 3.
Yeah.
That was beautiful.
That was, yeah. That was, we're so synced in.
Surprisingly,
right now,
that was not scripted. Next up, I think this, he's left multiple reviews now. The true A1 day one, Kempin ain't easy. I don't even know how
Kempin
he's leaving.
Ain't easy.
I've tried to leave multiple reviews myself.
He's hacked the mainframe.
I don't know how he's doing it. He's hacked the matrix.
He has hacked the mainframe.
This is actually pretty funny. Subject line, the revolution will be televised.
Ooh.
And then in there, and then in the review says, except not this year in football, .. Or next year in football. .. But at some point it will.
Some point. That
at
is
some
correct.
Point. So in the meantime, tune into TDR and laugh, cry, and bleed with us. It's the Vanderbilt way.
That's a great review.
That's beautiful.
Also, before we get into this, last night I had a dream. I took some melatonin, some ashwagandha, and I had a dream, but I don't think it was a dream. I think it was real life. At the foot of my bed was an angel, and they looked at me and they said, the revolution will be televised this basketball season. So I had a prophetic vision from an angel of the Lord. So the revolution will be televised starting November 7th, baby. Hope is on the way. The SSRIs are going down the toilet.
You riled Phoebe up, I'll tell you that. Yeah, she's going just, crazy over here. Rolled over. All right, Trevor, now time to get into this Vanderbilt Ole Miss preview. We will be discussing mostly the Vanderbilt side, like I mentioned, but the most headline of headlines for Vanderbilt heading into this game against Ole Miss is the quarterback position.
Uh-huh.
And Clark Lee, like I said on the Commodore Hour, named or said that Ken Seals will remain the starter as he has been the previous 3 games. In quote, Clark Lee said, I think he, referring to Ken Seals, has been a galvanizing presence. He's earned the respect of the program and how he's battled adversity and kept a positive outlook. He goes on to say, on the whole, he's protected the ball and gotten us organized on the field. I think that's one thing that's probably undervalued when you're watching the game as a spectator.
What has he galvanized? That's what has been galvanized?
I don't know if galvanized is the right word. I would almost say stabilized.
That's
is a better word than galvanized. I don't think Ken Seals is a galvanizing presence. I think he's a stabilizing presence. He's I mean this in the least disrespectful way, but he does manage the game.
Yeah.
He's more of a coach on the field than Swan, who didn't really seem to be in total control of the offense this year.
But could give you some bombs.
But could,
when you needed
but it. Could galvanize the offense with explosive plays that Ken just doesn't provide. So I do like that he says that's probably an undervalued thing when you're watching the game as a spectator. Clearly, there's some little there's some calming presence that Ken Seals brings
that's a fair
to
point.
This team. Overall, because they've just overall played a little bit better when Seals has been out there. It's kind of like when you watch any game that's quarterbacked by Mike Wright, who just won another SEC game in an ugly fashion.
This past Saturday, Mike Wright way, dude.
There's something about it. It's not in the analytics. It doesn't show up when they're in shorts. It doesn't even show up on the field when you're watching as a fan. But there's something about these guys that just go out, and Ken Seals hasn't done it yet, but give a presence to the team.
Just a gamer.
The only difference is Ken Seals hasn't won any games.
Yeah.
So I don't know what galvanizing presence, like you said, he's really talking
That's
about.
That's like whenever I think of a galvanizing presence, I truly think of what Mike Wright did towards the end of last season. That was a galvanizing presence if I've ever seen one.
So how do you feel overall about that announcement, and how much do you actually give credence to the elbow injury?
Okay, I wanted to ask you about the elbow injury. I wanted to get your take on it because I have thoughts. And we've hinted at this on previous pods. Not only am I reading this as Clark announcing Seals as the starter for this Ole Miss game, for some reason in my bones, this feels like Ken Seals is the guy going forward. And what I mean by that is not only this season, as Phoebe attacks me, Phoebe is a AJ Swan truther. She's like, no, don't disrespect my boys. I'm right there with you, girl. I think this has next season implications because if you were going to bring AJ Swan back, it was going to be after the bye week, no?
You'd think so.
You'd think so, and that's why the elbow contusion just seems like a really big – I mean, it just seems like a lie to me. You know what I mean? Like, you're just using that as an excuse to maybe lessen the blow a little bit. I'd imagine his elbow is fine.
I think he probably did have an elbow contusion during the UNLV game. He probably did have some sort of injury to that, and it probably did affect his play against Kentucky, but it probably didn't fully excuse a lot of the decisions he made.
Yeah.
And so now that's something that, like you said, does soften the blow in a way as a narrative saying, well, there's this elbow contusion continuous problem that's going on in the background as well. The season hasn't really shaped out that well, and we definitely don't want to put him out there at less than 100% and kill his confidence further. I'm not defending the decision necessarily, but from a coaching staff perspective, if Ken Seals actually has 2 years of eligibility left,
that's crazy. Which broke my brain.
I think he does. Him and AJ Swan have the same amount of eligibility. I think this does carry over, and I really think that Swan might be gone after this year.
I agree. It's very frustrating because the decision making hasn't been there this year. The turnovers have been a problem. We're not excusing that, but to lose an arm talent like that and AJ Swan, it seems sort of inexcusable to me. No.
So obviously, if you've listened to the Door Report, you know I'm a big AJ Swan fan, and I think he has the potential to be a great quarterback. I don't know if he's actually shown anything on the field that has proven that out. I think he was a 4-star. He's looked good at times, not consistently. But keep in mind, Ken Seals was a 4-star too.
Yeah.
Like, I know
out
that we.
Out of Texas.
And it was a while ago, and it was a Derek Mason class. But Ken Seals was a 4-star quarterback coming out that started as a true freshman. We kind of know what we have with Ken Seals now.
Yeah.
AJ Swan is not a known commodity in the same way as Ken Seals. I think that's why the ceiling is higher. You know, Ken Seals is about an average SEC quarterback. That's not a slight at him. That's just what he is. If he had superior talent over SEC opponents, I think Ken Seals could win some football games. The problem is Vanderbilt's roster is the least talented roster in the whole SEC.
Yeah.
So it's going to be real tough to win games with Ken Seals at quarterback. You saw that his freshman year going 0-9, and he's yet to win a game as a starter this season. I mean, I know he's had tough matchups, but at some point, I mean, that's what he is. He's not going to win you games. Your team around him has to win the game, and he can manage the game.
Yeah. I will say, too, another thing that is so frustrating is I agree that we haven't seen Swan put it together yet, but, and maybe I'm giving too much credence to this, you've seen a lot of flashes, and maybe I'm putting too much stock in those flashes. And yes, I'm going to preface it again. I know he makes dumb mistakes, but you've seen him make some throws that are jaw-dropping, and that you haven't seen Ken make those throws. You really haven't seen a Vanderbilt quarterback in a long time make those throws.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? So that's maybe I'm putting too much stock into that, but that tells me that, man, if he can just put it together, if this coaching staff can somehow help him out, which is their job, is their job to develop young talent. Clark Lee has said that over and over and over again. We're a developmental program. Then, hey, maybe help develop him. I don't know. You know what I mean? But you've seen flashes from him that scream, man, this kid has talent. And I would hate to lose that.
I like that you said he makes throws that you just haven't seen Kinsale's make, because I think he does that both directions. And I'm not dismissing what he does. He makes throws down the field successfully that Kinsale doesn't make. And I don't know if he necessarily has the arm talent to make. Mm-hmm. AJ Swan also has made decisions and made throws that Kinsale would never make in the other direction.
Yeah.
I mean, he's thrown the ball into some spots that are just inexcusable. Just not reading the defense correctly and horrible, horrible decisions, overestimating his arm talent ability in against better competition. Once Swan steps into the, it's kind of like what we said with Mike Wright, and in a way, it's just AJ Swan has more arm talent. Once that competition goes up, those windows close down.
Yeah.
And when those windows have gotten tighter, AJ Swan has made errors and thrown picks and turned the ball over. But Trevor, I think that's about it for the quarterback. I don't want to say controversy. There's no real controversy. It's Kinsale coming out as the starter, but
yeah,
quarterback storyline
going into this maybe
game. Dilemma. Yeah, maybe that's a better word. But Vanderbilt travels to Oxford, Mississippi to battle against the Ole Miss Rebels, number 12 in the country, coming off, what, three straight wins against LSU, Arkansas, and Auburn, sitting at 6-1. Their only loss on the year coming on the road against Alabama, 24-10. Vegas has set the line at 24.5 points. Obviously, Ole Miss as the favorite, a 24.5 point favorite. The over-under set at 63.5. Vanderbilt is plus 1,300 on the money line, according to DraftKings Sportsbook. So you placing any money on that Vanderbilt money line?
Absolutely not.
No? You don't see that happening?
No, I wouldn't even place money on them to cover the spread.
So this is a little bit different dynamic. I don't think we've actually had anybody on to preview an opponent yet this season when it's just been me and you.
No, I don't believe so. No.
Usually at this point is when we'd go through the Ole Miss roster and do our best to preview based on what we've seen. But like I mentioned in the first part before segment one, we have Michael Katz of the, I'm going to completely forget, the Northeast Mississippi Journal, Daily Journal. Is that right?
I believe that is correct.
Is that correct? Okay. He'll be previewing Ole Miss for us. Jackson Dart at quarterback, Judkins at running back. Those two names are going to run all over Vanderbilt. That's the basic premise of how I see this game going, is Vanderbilt being unable to stop this Ole Miss rushing attack.
I agree. Yeah, that's and here's the thing too, is Dart is not only going to run all over them, he's going to throw all over them too. So you have a two-headed monster in Jackson Dart, a kid that can run really well, and a kid that is really explosive with his arm. And you're going up against one of the best backs in the SEC in Quinshon Judkins. So and once again, Ole Miss has very good talent at receiver, which I guess since the Hugh Freeze era, it feels like every year they have a borderline elite or elite talent at the wide receiver position. I just don't know how Vanderbilt even stops them. I really don't.
The problem with Vanderbilt's defense and any matchup that they face, because I was writing a little Q&A thing for Michael for an article and he asked something about the offense or the defense for Vanderbilt versus the Ole Miss offense and what matchups to look for. And I just said, there's really nothing to look at because Vanderbilt's run defense is just as bad as their pass defense statistically.
Yeah.
And that's is Vanderbilt's giving up almost a 71% completion percentage to opponents. Mm-hmm. Opponents are completing 70.97% of their passes, number 129 in the FBS. The flip side of that, Vanderbilt's also giving up 5.1 yards per rush on defense, number 113. In FBS. So both sides, every facet of this defense is underperforming. And now you're without CJ Taylor for who knows how long, as Clark Lee said, he's doubtful for the Ole Miss game.
I believe DeRicky is still questionable.
DeRicky is still questionable.
Yeah.
So you're losing your best defensive player on a defense that has completely struggled everywhere the entire season. So I said it a few episodes back, I don't see this Vanderbilt defense holding anybody below 30 the rest of the season. Auburn is the only candidate that I see on the horizon that's even a possibility. Mm-hmm. And I don't see it happening against anyone, because right now, whatever offenses want to do, they can do it against this Vanderbilt defense.
I agree. Yeah, this is and going back to CJ, losing him is tough because he's probably your best run defender on the team. And so whenever you're already bad at run defense and you lose your one good defender, I mean, that's trouble waiting to happen. I've said that I like what I've seen from Savion Riley at safety. John House has been okay, but I mean, if you're still missing DeRicky Wright, who, even if he does play, is probably going to be really rusty because hasn't played in a few weeks. They're not only going to attack you on the ground because they know your best run defender is out, they're going to attack you through the air because they know your best safety, your second best defensive player is out as well. So not only do you lose your number one, you lose your number two in DeRicky.
I mean, CJ Taylor tied for the lead on the team with two interceptions. DeRicky Wright is who he's tied with two interceptions, both of them injured. DeRicky possibly going to be able to play. CJ Taylor, you said, probably one of your best run stoppers, is also second on the team in sacks with three sacks. Nate Clifton with 3.5 above him. So you're losing a real do-it-all guy in CJ Taylor. Everybody that's listening to this podcast knows how good CJ Taylor is and how much of a loss that is. Also leads the team in forced fumbles, has forced two fumbles this season. Let me make sure I'm right on that he leads the team. Yes, he does. Tied with DeRicky Wright.
I mean,
those are guys that you can't lose, and both of them are injured.
Yeah.
So, Trevor, I think that's about it. Micah will help us dig into this Ole Miss roster in their season a little bit more. I think it's time to get into our three keys to the game. What do you got for number one?
Are we doing a cocktail break?
We'll do that before segment two.
Beautiful. My key number one, you're going to have to see a lot of juice from the special teams, I think. and I know I hate to lead off with special teams, but early in the season, you saw Jaden McGowan be really special in the return game. I know that he's put a lot on film because of those returns, and teams are game planning for him. But he's going to have to give some big runs. If he is able to field a kick, you got to take it past the 25. You got to get to the 30, 35, maybe break one for a big chunk of yardage. Also with Vanderbilt's offense, the way that they have been very conservative with Ken Seals, Matt Hayball, which he's done all season long, is going to have to be Matt Hayball. The only way this defense has a chance is if they force Ole Miss to march down the field. And even if that's the case, I still don't like their odds. So Vanderbilt's not going to be able to score on offense that much, probably not going to be able to score on defense. I'd like to see the special teams get us some points.
I like that. I have something. I've been kind of struggling with my number three key to the game. That kind of plays into my number three a little bit, but it doesn't quite overlap with any of my keys. So good job. That's the first time in a while that our keys haven't.
Yeah, we were talking about that before the pod.
That our keys haven't completely overlapped. So my key number one is easier said than done. But right off the bat, you have to give Ken Seals time to throw. Mm-hmm. And this Ole Miss defensive line is good at creating pressure on opponents. They rank number 14 in the country in sack percentage when opponents drop back. So 9.7% of the time that opponents drop back to throw the football, Ole Miss gets a sack. Vanderbilt hasn't been horrible at quarterback protection thus far this season. Vanderbilt throws the ball the ninth most of any team in the country, throwing the ball over 60% of the time and only give up sacks 5% of the time. So the offensive line has to step up and at least give Ken Seals an opportunity to throw the ball down the field, because you can't make a complete living on wide receiver screens. So you've got to give him time. That being said, I want to see some damn wide receiver screens this game against Ole Miss.
Yeah, shout out to Blake. We need to absolutely spam wide receiver screens to Will Shepard. I want to see it like 20 times a game, or 20 times this game. My key number two, coaching staff, open up the playbook. It's your backs are against the wall. Before the season, you said the goal is postseason play. You were at six losses. Your back's against the wall. And the SEC has a gun to your head, and they're about to cock it. There's nowhere you can go. The boats are burning. Who cares if he throws a couple picks? If they look a little bit discombobulated, you got to give yourself a chance in the playbook. You got to open up the playbook. You got to get funky with it. You have to give yourself a fighting chance, especially with a defense this good. You cannot roll out there and continue to play the old conservative Vanderbilt football on the offensive side that we have seen with Ken Seals thus far. I was telling Will before the game or before the pod, it reminds me of those old Ted Kane offenses, just boring offensive football, just not getting it done. And the crazy thing is you have the playmakers to make big chunk plays. You have the talent at the outside. I like a lot of those matchups whenever Vanderbilt lines up out there. Open up the playbook and just give the offense a chance, man. If they fall incomplete, so what? If you have an arm punt, who the hell cares? Just give the offense a chance. Open up the playbook and just get funky with it.
This is a tough one to preview because in reality, that line is set at 24.5 points for a reason.
Yeah.
I mean, Vanderbilt's outmatched at almost every single position, every facet of this game, but so all the keys, take them with a grain of salt because, and like a lot of this stuff we're talking about, it's almost impossible.
Yeah.
With the matchups they have. But my key number two is just going to be contain Jackson Dart. As Vanderbilt fans, we know the history that this Vanderbilt defense and the defenses before it have of containing running quarterbacks. Jackson Dart is an explosive dual threat quarterback. I have his stats from the past few games pulled up here somewhere, but in their last five games, as I struggle to click through these tabs, last game against Auburn, 14 carries, 44 yards, two touchdowns with a long rush of 29 yards. Against Arkansas, they won that game 27-20, 12 carries, 33 yards. LSU, seven carries for 50 yards and a touchdown. Against Alabama, a loss, 12 carries for 6 yards and a touchdown. And then the win against Georgia Tech, 14 carries, 136 yards and two touchdowns. So, of course, we know that sacks count against rushing yardage, but if Vanderbilt can hold Jackson Dart to under 30 yards net rushing, consider that Vanderbilt has a possibility to win this game. I don't think that's going to happen. I think he's going to run all over Vanderbilt, but that should be the goal, is contain Jackson Dart, number one, deal with Judkins, number two.
See, okay, we're on opposite sides of the spectrum because my key number three was, and I know we talked about this before the pod, that it's why even say it? Because it's impossible. I'm going to say contain Judkins, number one, and try and make Dart beat you through the air. Just from a this, and this is not analytics, just from a luck perspective, I like his odds of throwing incomplete passes more often than I do them just running down our throat with Judkins. I think he's a really dynamic running back. I'd almost completely sell out to stop Judkins and make Dart beat you through the air.
Well, the problem is if you sell out to stop Judkins, that's not really what Ole Miss does.
Yeah.
I mean, they only throw the ball 41% of the time, number 115 in the country. They're going to run the ball regardless.
Yeah.
So you really have to choose, are you going to focus on the run with Judkins or focus on the keeper with Dart out of this read option kind of style offense?
I would much rather just be like sell out on Judkins. If Dart beats you, so be it.
I can't really even disagree with that. I just think stop the run game and force them to throw the ball down the field. That's impossible. That's a
gotta
big
get
ask.
Them in long.
Nobody's really
long,
been able to stop.
Long situations.
Yeah, nobody's been able to stop the run game. And when Ole Miss does throw the football, they do throw it well. Number 13 in yards per pass in the country, 9.2 yards per pass. My key number three, I've battled with this one in my brain on how to phrase it. Win the field position battle within the game. You kind of hit on that with special teams. That's more of a microcosm of win the little things within this game. Field the punt on a fair catch when you should. Have a good return. Create a turnover. Ole Miss only turns the ball over 0.7 times per game. One of the best turnover offenses in not turning the ball over in the country. Vanderbilt needs to force turnovers and capitalize on good field position given to them. Shockingly, none of my keys were win the turnover battle because I think it's beyond that. It's beyond that this week. Maybe that'll come back against Auburn or South Carolina. We shall see. But
Phoebe's in a very aggressive mood tonight.
She's riled up. She can feel the vibes. But that's all I've got, man. I'm pretty defeated at this point looking at the football season and looking where it's at. Very disappointing. I know Vanderbilt fans are feeling that across the whole fan base. So I think it's about time to move on to predictions here, Trevor, and a pretty quick segment one here, unless you've got anything else to add.
Nope. I think we hit on it. What a depressing season.
Depressing season.
This has been one of the worst seasons. Like this season has hurt me more than a lot of seasons. This season might hurt me worse than the 2020 season. Because going into 2020, I was like, we're not going to win a ball game. This one, like, I had expectations that we could, like, finally change the narrative. So this one's a punch in the mouth.
Yeah, this one hits different.
For my prediction, I'm going to go Ole Miss 54, Vanderbilt 17.
Wow.
I think it's a bloodbath.
Wow.
All of my keys to success I gave were just theoretical. I'm like, oh, in theory, like, this would work. But it's not going to happen. So 54-17, Ole Miss.
Locking it in. Lock it in on the Zen.
Lock on the Zen.
54-17 or 51.
54-17.
54-17 is what you had. I think Vanderbilt will cover this game.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think that you built a little bit of momentum after the Georgia game. I think coming off a bye week, this is a Vanderbilt team that's going to come back more focused after the bye week and in a better position to stop this kind of diverse Ole Miss offense that Lane Kiffin runs. I'm going to go Ole Miss 38, Vanderbilt 21. I think Ole Miss has been pretty consistent in kind of playing along at whatever pace their opponent's playing at since they started SEC play. Lost to Alabama 24-10, beat LSU 55-49, then snuck by Arkansas and Auburn both 27-20 against Arkansas, 28-21 against Auburn. I think all of those defenses that they faced are better than Vanderbilt's. Mm-hmm. So I think Vanderbilt's still going to give up 38, but I think there will be opportunities for Vanderbilt to move the ball down the field and score.
Do you think they capitalize on that, though?
I think that they put up at least 20 points against this Ole Miss defense. I don't think this Ole Miss defense is anything to fear. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's the strength of the team. Both these teams kind of suck at time of possession. And keep in possessing the ball. It's just going to be Ole Miss is going to hit explosive plays. Can Vanderbilt do what they did against Georgia and turn those explosive plays, stall them out in the red zone, and create problems for their opponent? I don't know. 38-21, maybe that's a little bit hopeful, but I'm going to lock it in on the Zen. 38-21 from me, 54-17 from Trevor. I think that's about it for segment one as we get another random like bubble on the screen. What the hell is that?
A stranger. It's got to be an update.
But next up, Trevor, we've got Michael Katz of the, I don't want to misquote it, he covers Ole Miss for the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal.
He will be coming up.
Jesus Christ. He will be coming up right after the TDR cocktail break. So grab yourself a cold one and we will be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back into episode 245 of the Door Report, segment two. I'm Will Byram, continuing to be joined by my co-host Trevor Hewlin, and we are lucky enough to be joined by Michael Katz, who covers Ole Miss for the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. Michael, thanks for taking the time with us here today.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So Vanderbilt has a matchup against Ole Miss coming up this Saturday. I don't want to say it's a mismatch, but it's a bit of a mismatch. Ole Miss coming into this game 6-1, number 12 in the country, 3 straight wins. Vanderbilt coming in at 2-6, disappointing so far this season. Obviously unranked, coming off 6 straight losses. What is the vibe around this Ole Miss program? Because I was talking with Trevor before this and said they feel almost like a quiet number 12 right now, mm-hmm. especially with Lane Kiffin at head coach.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a little, when the season started, I remember I was telling people I could see this team going 10-2. I could see it going 6-6. There were so many variables in there. Where they're at right now is about best case scenario. And I do think that they are a little bit, to an extent, being overlooked. I mean, when you look at the SEC, you think of Georgia and Alabama and teams like that. But this Ole Miss team has quietly, I know the Alabama loss was disappointing. It was just an ugly game all around. But that win against LSU was as thrilling a game as I've ever probably witnessed. They beat an Arkansas team that tends to always play weird games, and then you win at Auburn, which is a place that Ole Miss doesn't win at. You know, last year Ole Miss was talented, there's no question, but it was, if you put it together, a team the way they did with transfer portal players, can it come together in the way that it would if you create a team in the traditional sense, through having guys on the roster for 3-4 years, whatever it is. Last year, it started off really well, and it ended very, very poorly. They lost 4 in a row to end the year, and it was bad. And there are obviously coaching rumors going around with the aforementioned Auburn. And it was a pretty stunning slide. And this year, I think that they're put together similarly, that it's a lot of transfer portal players, but it seems to be more cohesive this year. They seem to be more of that cliche team with the better chemistry. And I know players will always say that. They'll always say that, oh yeah, I know we're all really close. But when you look at the games they've won and how they've won them, I do think there is something to be said for it. So I think the vibes are good. I think they understand that there's some really interesting games coming up with next week. You got A&M, and then you go to Georgia. And then of course you got the Egg Bowl at the end of the year. I'm really curious to see how they come out for this one, because this is like the classic overlook game when you know what's coming up. And I don't think they're going to be caught off guard, but I wouldn't be surprised if Ole Miss starts off a little bit slow, just because of the emotions of the last few weeks and the emotions of what are coming up. I'm really curious to see how they come out on Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. Michael, thank you for joining us. My question is, Vanderbilt fans are, of course, going to know who Jackson Dart is and who Quinshon Judkins is. Other than those two players, particularly on the defensive side, I'll preface, who should Vanderbilt fans know and be focused on for this Ole Miss team?
Already going out of order, Trevor.
Oh, are we?
Yeah, we can just go defense first. Oh. That'll be fine.
Go offense first. Go offense, Michael. Let's go offense other than Judkins.
Just immediately takes us off track.
Sorry, Michael. This is the TBR difference right here.
I think the big name to look for is Trey Harris, wide receiver. He's a transfer from Louisiana Tech, and he is that big-bodied guy that they don't have otherwise. He's 6'2". He's lean. He's muscular. He looks like an SEC receiver, is what I tell people. And they've got a lot of guys who look like they play in the slot, which isn't a bad thing. But they have a guy who can win, you know, posting up. And he had some injuries earlier this year. He had a surgery after the Tulane game, and I think his first six catches, five were touchdowns. I mean, it was crazy. And granted, that's against Mercer and the first drive against Tulane. He was putting up insane numbers. Then he got hurt against Tulane, and the offense really took a step back after he got hurt. And so I think they learned how to live without him, but they are so much better with him. And he was really good last week against Auburn, another 100-yard game. He is really the receiving weapon that makes that offense go. And, you know, Dayton Wade and Jordan Watkins. Watkins is one-handed right now because apparently he had a couple of plates put in. I don't even know how he is. He's like returning punts, which is just insane to think about, one-armed. But I'm interested to see how that unfolds. He had quite the contraption on his hand last week during the game. But you know, they have a lot of really nice receivers and that can make plays, but Trey Harris is really, if the passing game is going, it's because of him. And the other one I would say offensively is Quinshon's running mate, Ulysses Bentley. You know, last year against Vanderbilt, you know, Quinshon was good, but Zach Evans was really good. They had that 1-2 punch. We were curious to see what the 1-2 punch was going to look like this year. We didn't really necessarily know if Ulysses Bentley was if he had those characteristics. We didn't really see much of him last year because he was hurt. He's looked really good when he's been given the opportunity. So I think when they give him carries and they feed him, it helps everybody because, one, he's got a chance to break some open, but two, it gives Quinshon a little bit of a breather. So I would say those two guys are pretty big parts of that offense.
Wow, I didn't realize Bentley was averaging 6.1 yards per carry. That's a pretty great 1-2 punch when you go from Judkins to a guy averaging 6.1 yards per carry there. I know we said, you know, guys outside of Jackson Dart, but when you're covering a team week in, week out, a lot of times the actual storyline of play might be different or might be the same is what you kind of see as someone as a casual SEC fan outside of Vanderbilt. How would you evaluate Jackson Dart's play so far this season?
It hasn't been perfect. And I think that there is this expectation because of how his accolades coming in. You know, he was the national player of the year out of high school. He was at USC. He was this huge transfer. And I think everybody expected him to be like Matt Corral right away. And that just wasn't realistic. And last year, he had his issues. He was very inconsistent. He turned the ball over at a very inopportune times, 11 picks. You know, Matt the year before only threw 5. And so it was pretty jarring going from a guy who was so careful with the ball but was willing to take big shots to the turnover issues. And this year, you know, they brought in competition and Jackson fended it off with Spencer Sanders and Walker Howard coming in. And he's been a little bit up and down. I think part of that is the offensive line maybe hasn't pass protected as well as we expected, and the injuries to Trey Harris I think were pretty big. But he's done a really nice job of taking care of the ball. He's only got 3 interceptions. He hasn't fumbled. He's been really good at making the plays when they matter. And that was something he wasn't really good at last year. There were moments when if a game was hanging in the balance, it didn't always go great. This year, Jackson is making the right call. He's checking down. He's taking off when he needs to. He probably still needs to learn how to slide a little bit better. That is the constant conversation around Ole Miss with him. That's just not his style. He's a tough dude. I think that he has been for a second year. Would you like to see, you know, a guy throwing a Jaden Daniels like touchdown numbers? Of course. But I think within the confines of their offense, he's efficient. He's throwing the ball down the field and he's not turning it over. And when you do all those things within the Lane Kiffin system, it's how you end up with 40 points a game. They run the ball and they don't turn it over. So I think he's taken some big steps and he's really looked like the player that I think last year we thought he was going to look like this. This is the guy we thought he was.
All right, Michael, now we're going to transition to defense. One of my questions is every team likes to have a sort of identity that they can sort of hang their hat on. That even goes into offense and defense. For this Ole Miss defense, what would you say their identity is right now?
I would say they're aggressive, and I know that's a kind of interesting answer, but I say that because if you look at their stats, I was looking this up today, and they're in the top 5, I think, nationally in sacks per game, but so many of those come from their linebackers, and I think that Pete Golding understands what he has. And he understands the best way to create pressure with this team is by bringing guys in multiple ways. And so you will see linebackers in the backfield a lot. Will there be some missed tackles? Absolutely. But they want to play behind the line of scrimmage. And they've done a really good job of that for the most part. They've been aggressive. Let's be honest. It will get them every once in a while. Ole Miss has been burned for the occasional deep play. And I think that goes to the corners as well. But for the most part, that aggressiveness all around has really has been a nice change for them.
I know you mentioned it at the beginning, and after this question, I think we'll get to your prediction here for the upcoming matchup against Vanderbilt, or as Vanderbilt travels on the road to Oxford, Mississippi to take on Ole Miss. I know you hit on it early, but Ole Miss is flying a little bit under the radar, and they've won three straight, but those three straight wins have all been by 7 points. You know, how are you feeling about the actual performances you've seen, especially against Arkansas and Auburn, kind of bottom tier where Vanderbilt's sitting in the conference right now, that I don't want to say only won, but that you only won by 7 points? And I watched some of those games, a little bit disappointing at times, I think, to Ole Miss fans. I don't know how you feel, Michael.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at, if we're just playing chalk, right, you look at those games, Ole Miss should win those by a lot more. If you're just looking at talent, you're looking at where those other teams are. But I think that, you know, this is my third year in the SEC, and I know that you guys understand this too. Like, these games are hard. It doesn't matter where you are, who you're playing. And so, you know, I look at it as, would Ole Miss have won these games last year? And Ole Miss would not have won these games last year. They lost these games last year. They got smoked in some of these games last year. You know, that tough road environment at Auburn, a place where they have strong feelings about Ole Miss and Lane and everything going on there, that's not a game that they've traditionally won. Arkansas is always kind of a disaster. If it's not a 52-51 game, it's, you know, Rocket Sanders running for 300 yards and Quinshon running for 200. And there being like just an insane amount of points scored in the fourth quarter because Ole Miss makes a little bit of a rally. And so that's always a weird one. I think, would you like to win them all by a ton? Of course. But I think that the thing that people are excited about is that, like, these are games that Ole Miss, in recent history, they lose these games. Now they're winning them. And I think that with where this program is and the progress they've made, I think that they'll take the wins, especially in this manner. Of course, yeah, you'd love to, you know, beat the pants off everybody by double digits. But if you're winning at Auburn for only the fourth time ever, which is nuts to think about, I think that, yeah, fourth time ever. I
did not know that.
Yeah, it's insane. And only, I think, the third time since 2000. Eli won there in 2003, and then I think it was 2015 was the other one. That doesn't happen. And so for them to win those games, I think people are excited that that's where they are, especially compared to where they've been in years past.
Yeah, absolutely. Michael, I got one more question for you. We're going to stay on the defensive side of the ball. This might be a tough one to ask, but I think you'll give a great answer. In regards to Pete Golding, there was sort of a love-hate relationship with Alabama fans and sort of his performance at Alabama. What is the vibe around the fan base when it comes to Pete Golding and this Ole Miss defense right now?
I think that there is, well, let's be honest, it has not always been a smooth sailing. I mean, the very first defensive play of the game was a 75-yard touchdown run by Mercer's quarterback. That was the first play of the game, and everyone just looked at each other like, we're doing this again, huh? Like, but I think the thing that has been there's two things that I think are important here. It's one, they've made adjustments. And that's not something that in previous years they did a very good job of. If something was beating them up, it beat them up for the whole game. And it would become the story of the game. Pete Golding's done a really nice job of adjusting things, not just during games, before games, halftime, between quarters, between series. He's done a really nice job of seeing what isn't working and trying to get things straightened out. And I think that's been a nice change for fans to know that they have a coordinator who is truly seeing everything for what it is. And I know Alabama fans have their thoughts on him. And I think part of that is the expectations there are so high always. And that's, you know, that's where they've been the last 15, 20 years. But this is an Ole Miss program that I think there's part of it is they're just really excited that they invested that sort of money in a big name like that too. And I think that, you know, the adjustments are great, but showing your fan base and your coaches and your program, your recruits, that you are willing to put big money to lure. Yeah, and you can say lure. I'm not sure what that would have happened with him after this season, but they got Alabama's defensive coordinator. That is a pretty wild thing to think about Ole Miss doing. And a lot of money goes into that. And I think that that is something that fans are really excited about because it shows the investment. And I think that, you know, the defense, it's not perfect. And there's a lot of, you know, the transfer portal mixed with a new scheme. There's so many moving parts with it. But I think it's shown progress, and I think that for this team, with the way that they score points generally, they just need to have a defense that can make adjustments. And so far, so good. And you know, are they going to be a top 10 defense in the next couple of years? I don't know, but it's gotten better. I think that's what they really needed.
Investment and progress. Vanderbilt has seen a little bit more investment in recent years. Has not seen the progress side of that necessarily. Thank you again, Michael, for taking the time and being an awesome guest here, helping us preview the Ole Miss Vanderbilt matchup. Last year, Ole Miss traveled to Nashville, beat the Doors pretty soundly, 52-28. It's prediction time, Michael. How do you see this game playing out?
I do remember Vanderbilt led 20-17 at halftime. That was an interesting one for a little bit. And then Jonathan Mingo had the game of his life, if I remember correctly.
Vanderbilt fans are a broken bunch. We see a lead at halftime and we're like, how are we going to screw this up?
Yep.
I think that potentially Vanderbilt can score points. I think their passing game is good and Ole Miss isn't perfect in coverage. I do think though that Vanderbilt not being able to run the ball is going to play into Ole Miss's hands a little bit. Ole Miss is going to score points. I don't think there's any question. This seems like a 45-14 kind of game ish, where I think that maybe Vanderbilt like scores a touchdown early and they're feeling really good, and then Ole Miss realizes like, hey, like we need to get this together.
Pretty similar to the Georgia game, to be honest.
Yeah.
It went down. That's funny that you predicted 45-14, because Trevor, you were what, 54-17?
I predicted 54-17.
And I was 38-21. So you're like right in between me and Trevor. So that's pretty great. You've got me. I'm the most positive on the Vanderbilt side here. Only a 17-point loss covering the 24.5-point spread. You've got Trevor the most negative. Vandy's going to give up 54 points. And then you're in the middle. Vandy's going to give up 45 points. But all of us have one thing in common. Vanderbilt's giving up 30-plus points. That's been a theme here at TDR.
It's biblical.
It's biblical. Vanderbilt's going to give up 30-plus points. Thank you again, Michael, for taking the time to join us here on episode 245 of The Door Report. Follow Michael Katz on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle there, Michael?
If you're dumb enough to follow me on the old x.com, it is at Michael L. Katz, K-A-T-Z. It's a dangerous mix of memes and occasional Ole Miss reporting.
Perfect. That's how I would describe me and Trevor's accounts as well. Thanks again, Michael. Thank you all for listening out there. This has been episode 245 of The Door Report, powered by Corey Perkins of Parks Realty.